Welcome back to the Food Pod for Humanity, brought to you by Columbia Climate School's Food for Humanity Initiative. I'm your host, Joshua Luisa. This is the fourth and final episode of our limited series on food waste. First, for those of you who are just joining us, welcome, and let me give you a quick recap on the episodes so far. Dr. Gisfonzo, Professor of Climate and Director of the Food for Humanity Initiative, gave us an introduction to the initiative and a global overview of food waste and its effects on climate change in Episode 1. Dr. Stephen Cohen, Senior Vice Dean of Columbia's School for Professional Studies, was featured in Episode 2, which was focused on urban food waste, with special emphasis on New York City's food waste issues and solutions. And Episode 3 I refer to as our compost episode, with interviews from staff members at the New York Department of Sanitation and the Lower East Side Ecological Center about New York's new citywide composting program and the benefits of composting in general. If you listened to that episode, you hopefully gleaned that I love compost. Despite its rather messy composition, it's a tidy solution to what to do with the inevitable food waste that occurs when we sell, prepare, and consume food. It's a way to breathe new life into the inedible byproducts that result from eating. However, it is far from a one-size-fits-all solution. While compost is great for disposing of the bones, peels, and rinds of our food, we know that a sizable chunk of food waste includes food that is perfectly edible. The good news is there are organizations out there working to divert that food before it hits the landfill or even the compost pile. Those organizations are conducting food rescue. Food rescue, also known as food recovery, food salvage, or surplus food redistribution, is a relatively simple concept. It involves taking edible food from farms, supermarkets, restaurants, catered events, and other food businesses, food that would otherwise go to waste, and instead giving it to those in need of food assistance for free or at a low cost. To learn much more about how one local organization does it, this episode we are headed to Brooklyn to visit with staff and volunteers at City Harvest. City Harvest is a nonprofit organization which began in New York City in 1982. It is the world's first food rescue organization and remains one of New York City's largest. I am really excited to share my experience visiting their headquarters in the Sunset Park neighborhood in Brooklyn. The day I arrived, they were holding their outdoor farmers market-style distributions of fresh free produce, what they call mobile markets. These are held every 2 weeks regularly in each of the 5 boroughs. This one in Sunset Park is held on every second Thursday and fourth Saturday of each month and sees an average of more than 1,000 Brooklyn residents fortnightly. I was greeted by a long but fairly organized line of folks queued up to receive pears and other food items as part of the distribution, which changes based on what is available in stock.
You have to wait.
La compra.
While there, I spoke with three members of the City Harvest team.
My name is Meryl Rothstein, and I'm the Director of Communications at City Harvest.
Hi, my name is Jenna Harris. I am the Associate Director on our Donor Relations and Supply Chain team, so I work with all the food donors within New York City that have excess food to donate to City Harvest.
My name is Jerome Nathaniel. I'm City Harvest Policy and Government Relations Director, so essentially I lead City Harvest advocacy work in terms of engaging with our pantry partners and identifying important policies that would alleviate hunger across our city and in managing relationships with elected officials on all levels of government. I've been with City Harvest for about 9.5 years now, so knocking on a decade.
You'll hear more from each of them. First up, Meryl shared an overview of the City Harvest mission and what she's observed in the years since she joined the City Harvest team.
City Harvest is New York's first and largest food rescue organization. So what that means is that we collect really high quality, nutritious food that would otherwise go to waste, and we deliver it to a network of about 400 soup kitchens and food pantries throughout New York City. And City Harvest has been around for a little over 40 years. I've been at City Harvest for about a year, and in that time, one thing I have seen is the need is growing. I would have thought as we got further away from the pandemic, the need might drop, and it has been the opposite in my time here. So that has been very sobering, certainly, and I think as an organization, I mean, we were always, before I got here, looking to rescue and deliver more and more food because the need in New York was always high. But I think this upward trend is really a challenge and is really what we as an organization are focusing on, is meeting that very elevated level of need.
Joshabed here again. The USDA's 2023 food security data shows that nearly 13% of New York City's residents, or about 1 million people, live in a food insecure household, defining food insecurity as a lack of consistent access to enough food for an active, healthy life. Living with food insecurity means those households are often faced with difficult decisions, making sacrifices about the quantity and quality of their food. Those sacrifices might include buying cheaper, lower quality varieties of preferred foods, skipping meals, or adults reducing their portion sizes to ensure the children in their households have enough to eat. According to Feed NYC, which is the policy committee on New York City hunger resources, an estimated 1.4 million New York City residents rely on emergency food. There are a number of factors that contribute to this, including rising food and living costs due to inflation, unsteady employment, low wages or income loss, especially during or due to the pandemic. Cuts to food benefit programs and social assistance can factor in as well, like the proposed $30 billion cut to the budget of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, over the next 10 years, under consideration soon by the House Agricultural Committee via a new farm bill. In the face of that need, what's the scale of City Harvest's operation? And how does it rescue the food it distributes? Jenna was able to provide some more details for us.
City Harvest is New York City's private response to hunger, so the majority of our funding comes from private sources that can include individuals or institutions. This year, City Harvest is set to rescue and deliver 81 million pounds of food to help feed hungry New Yorkers. That food is all distributed for free through our network of about 400 soup kitchens and food pantries. We have 23 trucks that are on the road 7 days a week to help rescue that food and deliver it to our pantry partners to help reduce food insecurity. And on top of that, keeping all of that food from going to waste, the 81 million pounds of food that we'll source this year is the equivalent of saving 24 million kilograms of carbon dioxide from going into the atmosphere. So that, I think, is also, of course, a great impact that we're having as well. Making sure that we can provide that food to people that need it year-round is really the core of our mission. And then on top of that, we add special projects, things like food show rescues. If there's a large food show in New York City where there's a lot of food that may go to waste, we'll go in and rescue from that. We also rescue from the green markets around the city, which is a seasonal project. We have food drives that people can participate in. That's sort of year-round, but we have a few specific ones based on the holidays and We try to supplement our work with special projects throughout the year. Our biggest food donors are a lot of the names you would recognize, businesses like Amazon, Trader Joe's, Fresh Direct. We work with the Hunts Point Produce Market. We actually have a person on my team who's up there sourcing food 4 days a week, so we get a lot of really great produce from there. Basically, anyone in New York City that has large amounts of food is most likely one of our partners. For most of those, they have a standing pickup with us. So, for example, the Amazons, a lot of them have 7 days a week pickups. Some of the Trader Joe's have 2 times a day pickups, so we go there 14 times a week just because of the volume of food they have and their space is really small. They don't have space to store it. But we do also add, for any of our donors, we call them irregular pickups. So someone can pick up the phone, call us, say, we have a large donation offer today. Can you send a truck tomorrow? We can make that happen. So we do work in both ways.
City Harvest is doing food rescue on a pretty big scale, aiming to rescue and redistribute millions of pounds of food, or tens of thousands of metric tons of food, this year. As Jenna mentioned, and as we have discussed over the course of this series, keeping that food out of the landfills translates to less harmful greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere, a way to stymie the warming of the planet that drives climate change. Jenna also echoed Merrill's point that the food needs in New York remain elevated.
The need in New York City is unfortunately growing. We're seeing right now that pantry visits are more than 80% higher than they were pre-COVID. So being able to source more food to meet that need is really our number one focus. The way that we would do that with City Harvest is maintaining and growing relationships with retailers around New York City and across the country that have excess food to donate to us so that we can meet that need that we're seeing in New York City. During COVID, we really scaled up our operations to meet the increased need. We had projected to rescue and deliver, I think, just over 60 million pounds of food that year. We ended up doing close to 150 million pounds in the peak of COVID, which was just based on the need that we saw in New York City. We have had to scale down a little bit to level set our own operations, but we have definitely tried to adjust and accommodate as many people and as much of the need as we can as it grows and changes in New York City. City Harvest Corps mission of rescuing and delivering 81 million pounds of food is really the biggest impact that we're making. It's feeding millions of New Yorkers that are facing food insecurity every day. In addition to that, we're able to add nutrition and education programs at senior centers, schools, our mobile markets, teach people how to cook their own healthy food, how to shop in more efficient ways.
Wow, 150 million pounds of food, equivalent to more than 68,000 metric tons of food, delivered at the peak of COVID is incredible. I got a tour of the on-site cold storage warehouse facility. At 150,000 square feet, or nearly 14,000 square meters, it's impressively large and is filled with some prepackaged foods like canned goods and juice boxes. But mostly, it's rows and rows of fresh produce. Most of it looks no different than what I would find at the grocery store, although some of it, I can figure out how it ended up unsold. For example, I was shown a bulk container of the biggest eggplants I've ever seen, like almost the length of my arm and at least twice as thick. I can see how the average consumer, like myself, might see something like that in the produce section and get intimidated, and in the spirit of avoiding food waste, pass it by, knowing that I would not be able to consume it before it goes bad. But thank goodness there's a way to salvage those eggplants and allow them to nourish fellow New Yorkers, rather than just tossing them out or even recycling them via compost. One thing I loved learning about City Harvest is the mindfulness in the design of their operation. They do more than just food rescue and simple food distributions. There's a great education part of their operations as well, teaching members of the community about how to shop for and prepare healthy, tasty, and affordable meals for themselves and their households. On the day of my tour of City Harvest, I was lucky enough to speak with Betsy Waters, who's been volunteering at City Harvest as a nutrition educator over the past 4 years, since the pandemic. She and the other volunteers braved a particularly windy day to prepare a sample meal for the crowd, demonstrating how to use one of the ingredients that were being distributed that day in a unique way.
So we are making pear spinach quesadilla. I'm a nutrition volunteer, and the whole point of the demos is to show them a healthy way that they can use one of the items that we're giving out. So like, for example, the other day we gave out papayas, and we did papayas berry parfaits. We gave out, we were giving out Rice Krispies or crispy rices and papayas. So we did a little bit, and in each little cup, we did a little bit of the crispy rice, a yogurt with that had lemon zest in it, and then a papaya berry block or stuff, and that went on the top. And today we're doing quesadillas because we're showing them that you can make a quesadilla with the pears. So we're doing a quesadilla, and I'm running behind. What we try to do is bring as few additional items as possible. So today we've got the pears, but it shows them a different way to use the pears. So we've got the cheese and the spinach and the pears, and it goes into a quesadilla. Today, we have so many volunteers, we did a more complex recipe. Everything from the market. We made a plantain hash with onions and orange peppers, and all three items were from the market. So we showed them that here you can make, just saute up the plantains and the onions and the orange and the red peppers. You should try that. It was really cool. I just find it so cool when somebody comes back to a future market and says, I made that. The other day this little girl came up and she was like, oh, I made such and such and it was so good. Oh, no more pears?
Whole loaf.
Oh. You want me to cut more pears?
I hope you could hear the activity and feel some of the energy of the demonstration and the dedicated chef and volunteers. Unfortunately, you can't enjoy the delightful smell of a pear, spinach, and cheese quesadilla being kicked on the fly over podcasts. But if it makes you feel any better, I didn't get a chance to taste them that day either. You can, however, find cooking tips and some of their most loved recipes on the City Harvest website. Really great if you're looking for some new vegetarian recipes, especially. City Harvest is a nonprofit organization, and it works closely not only with private businesses and other nonprofits, but also with the New York City government in its operations and with the community it serves in its program's designs. There is more to it than just taking unsold food and turning it over to people that need it, at the mobile markets and at food banks and pantries. Jerome broke down a bit more about the policy and advocacy side of their work.
So City Harvest primarily engages with elected officials on the city level and all levels of government to advocate for policies that end hunger. Those policies that we advocate for are entirely rooted and informed by pantry leaders and community leaders across the city that are engaging with neighbors and people that use those services and trying to ask the hard questions of why are folks in need of emergency food. So based off of that input, we build a policy platform and then we put it to action through meetings with elected officials, invites to our warehouse and different programs to really bring the work to life for our lawmakers across the city. Typically, when we think about food policy and food banks, we usually immediately think of the federal level because there's the United States Department of Agriculture, and they regulate all things related to the nutrition safety net, like SNAP, food access, and anything related to what's growing in our nation. That money typically trickles down to states, and they make decisions about how they're going to operationalize those fundings in their programs. New York City is really unique necessarily because the need's unique. So New York City has a number of really interesting and important programs like Community Food Connection that allows food pantries and food banks to essentially have this line of credit where we're ordering high quality product, high quality charitable food, and then delivering that to our network of emergency food programs. So when a program like that exists in your city, they're always going to sort of turn to food banks for input, for expertise on how to make it better and how to make sure that it's adequate to meet the need across the city. When we advocate, it's really important that we're working alongside food pantry leaders as well as other food policy experts across our city and across our nation to make sure that we're really focused on policy that has momentum, that has proven measurable outcomes for people that are relying on emergency food, and that we know that we can really make an impact for the people that we serve. So we work in coalition spaces. City Harvest works alongside organizations like Food Bank, another organization that fights hunger in our city, as well as United Way, to advocate and meet with elected officials. So that also translates into the public sector, in which we're inviting elected officials to these different programs so that they can see what the need is like in their community. We're also sort of raising awareness and education about hunger across our city and the increased demand for emergency food in partnership with elected officials, as well as with the private sector as well. That's really sort of the advocacy side of it, but of course City Harvest is a food bank and our operation is almost entirely in partnership with the private sector through food businesses that are donating food and looking at ways to not just provide surplus food, but also some are even creating meals and making special donations to City Harvest to really provide really high quality product to the people that we serve. One of the most important secret ingredients is to make sure that we're really engaged with the community and we're putting the community first and that we're listening to expertise and experience across our city. So we work very closely with the leaders of our food pantries to meet with elected officials, to testify on issues that are important, to make sure that we're capturing what the need really is on the ground and making sure that it's being responsive to what they're seeing in their communities. There might be certain programs like Community Food Connection that are providing emergency food across our city, and the immediate response in terms of advocacy is to make sure that program is more adequate, that there's enough food to go to our food pantries. But we know from conversations with pantry leaders that that's not enough. We need to make sure that the food is responsive to religious requirements, to cultural needs and preferences, to dietary restrictions. So without having the voice of those pantry leaders, we wouldn't be able to really capture those nuances. So that's really a secret sauce to how we advocate in an equitable way. In terms of policies within our city that would be really helpful, Community Food Connections. This is a really important program that allows not just food banks, but food pantries that may not be getting food bank product to order super high quality food. So there's an opportunity to make sure that that program is more adequate, because the reality is that we're seeing a city where the demand for emergency food is at an all-time high. It's over 80% higher than it was before COVID. However, the emergency food supply is relatively stagnant, and there's less government programs in place to provide emergency food, and also less government programs in place to put money in people's pockets so that they may be able to make decisions about how they spend their own money. So long as that demand is increasing, the government of all levels is really a key player in making sure that public policy is addressing that need.
What Jerome describes in working with the private sector, city government, and most importantly, the community and pantry leaders is co-design, which is a collaborative process that involves the end users or beneficiaries of a program in how those services and policies are designed. That's particularly important when working in the food space because of the intimate nature of food. We can have nutritionists and other experts weigh in on exactly the right foods and portions to eat to meet our health needs. But if those foods don't align with what we're used to, aren't recognizable to what our grandparents and parents would lovingly make to nourish our bodies and bring us together in our cultural traditions, it just won't get eaten. Definitely not over the foods we like and are used to, no matter how much better it may be for our health. I love the way Jerome talks about their program and how they seek to serve the whole person, no matter what is going on in the world, or especially if things are going really wrong.
We know that we're serving a whole person when they're coming to our pantry, so they're making decisions at the dinner table about food, about housing, about child care and transportation. So I think when we look at policy, this is true for food policy, it's true for housing and everything. It's important to look at the whole person and how all those things are connected. So while there may not be this sort of silver bullet policy that addresses all those issues, it's really important to look at the whole person when we're talking about solutions. The need across our city is always evolving. City Harvest has been in existence for over 40 years in the early 80s. And over that time, you can imagine a host of different natural disasters like Sandy happened. Man-made disasters like government shutdowns have happened and recessions. So when we look at that bigger picture in that 40-year timeline, COVID falls into that same timeline where there are these big moments that happen and there's a shift in what need looks like. And more important, there's a shift in what we realize about how we solve hunger.
Josh Abed here again. There's another key component of City Harvest's work, emergency food distribution. As Jerome explained, they've been operating through natural and man-made disasters like storms, COVID, and recessions. Merrill also added that those emergencies can include the individual financial crises we may all face at times.
At City Harvest, we talk a lot about emergency food assistance. An unexpected medical bill, when somebody loses their job, organizations like City Harvest exist to fill that gap in times of emergency. And the food that we're able to provide gives them money that they can spend on the medical bill, on the rent, etc. So
City Harvest and its regular food distributions can be counted on to provide help to those facing chronic food shortages, but also to act as a safety net for all New Yorkers facing temporary setbacks. And again, there's an element of improving upon our food systems, where we benefit the environment by avoiding foods rotting and heating up in our landfills, and we honor the various resources that go into food, while at the same time alleviating the hunger burden on our neighbors. It is the food system providing a solution to a climate change issue, namely food waste in this case. For those of you outside the New York City area, there are food rescue organizations doing similar work across the United States and in other parts of the world. I'll include a short list in our show notes. I'll let Jerome close out my visit with his vision of the city and City Harvest over the next 40 years.
So food banks exist to end hunger, right? And essentially we want to imagine a world where there isn't hunger and folks aren't in need of food charities. We've been here for 40 years and we saw the needs shift based off of different challenges in the economy and the environment. Our goal essentially is that everyone has food on their plate and that we're serving the millions of New Yorkers that are struggling to afford food, housing, childcare, et cetera. And we believe that in order to address that, it's necessary that we continue to work really closely with partners, food donors, farmers, food pantry leaders to get food on the plate today. And that we're also looking at system change, advocacy, and policy to address hunger in the long term and tomorrow. So we've been here for 40 years. Is it possible that there be another 40 years? Yes, right? But I think that we need to continue to evolve. We've evolved over these 40 years in terms of how we operate. We have evolved in terms of our programming. We've added things like nutrition education and culinary education. And I'd expect that we'll continue to evolve over the next 40 years. So Food Bank might look different in the future.
As we leave the City Harvest headquarters, I reflect on this end of year season. At the time of this episode dropping, Thanksgiving was less than a week away, and the end of year is just shy of a month away. Between Christmas, Hanukkah, and New Year's celebrations, many of us will continue to gather, with food often serving as the centerpiece of those gatherings. That's the specialness of food that most of us understand. I hope hearing from these dedicated food rescue professionals and volunteers will inspire you to make choices to protect against food waste in your festivities. I hope you find ways to avoid wastefulness, to share any excess you may be lucky to have, either by joining a food drive effort, popping safe leftovers into a community fridge or bringing them to a neighbor, volunteering at a food pantry or soup kitchen. In your home, I hope you can avoid overbuying and think about how your choices can affect our environment and contribute to climate change. Be careful with your leftovers. Airtight containers are usually best, but do a bit of research on how to store your leftovers to maximize their shelf life and use your freezer as needed. Get creative with how you remix your leftovers so you don't dread that third day of consuming them. Try a new sandwich and soup recipes. Consider taking the uneaten veggies from your crudité platters, for example, and fermenting them, playing with new flavors and a different, maybe better way to preserve and consume them. Remember the push and pull of really enjoying food, glorious food, while doing your part to protect the environment from unnecessary strain. All right, folks, that is it for episode 4 and a wrap on season 1, our series on food waste. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey. It has been fantastic getting to deep dive into this topic and sharing what I learned with all of you. Thank you so much to Meryl, Jenna, Jerome, and Betsy from City Harvest for being our very special guests. Thank you to the rest of the voices featured on the podcast along the way. Rebecca Kriegman from the Department of Sanitation, Christina Dats-Romero from the Lower East Side Ecological Center, and Dr. Stephen Cohen from Columbia's School of Professional Studies. Thank you to the Food for Humanity Initiative's summer intern, Joey Ayali, who helped us with research and setting up some initial interviews. Thanks to Kristen Arnold of the Food People blog, who provided useful feedback at our start. Thank you to the Barnard IMETS equipment room for the use of their recording equipment. My biggest thanks are reserved for my colleagues from the Food for Humanity Initiative at the Columbia Climate School, especially Dr. Jess Fonzo, our director, who conceptualized the idea of this podcast and encouraged us all along the way, and Danny Din, who you heard on the first 2 episodes and helped me tremendously throughout this process. This has been the Food Pod for Humanity, brought to you by the Columbia Climate School's Food for Humanity Initiative. Don't forget to subscribe so you can be notified when we come back with our next series, looking into another topic that falls in the overlap between the food system and climate change. Please share this episode, go back and listen to the others if you haven't already, and give us your feedback. If you have any questions or suggestions for future podcast topics, please email me at foodsystems@climate.columbia.edu and put podcast in the subject line. Until next time.